Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Still in Green Bay right now, but getting ready to pack up and make a trip to our nation's capital this weekend, where the 3-3 Packers will take on the 2-4 Washington Commodores. They're 2-4, right? The 2-4 Washington Commodores.
Commanders.
Jeez. I've got to get that right.
This ain't Vanderbilt.
Woo, buddy. That was a test, and you passed. Commanders, where they will be quarterbacked by none other than Taylor Heinicke, who is a legend of his own making at this point.
I wonder if they'll have free Heineken giveaways for that.
I don't know. If he was smart, he would lock that deal up. Somebody should tell him that. You think we could be his manager? I bet he offers a better 401k.
All I know is that to stomach FedEx Field, I am here for a free Heineken because that is the worst stadium in the NFL by far.
That's what I've heard, so that should be fun to look forward to. Let's just kind of start at the top, though, with the Packers. And let's start big picture. Ryan, yesterday Matt LaFleur said that his message to the team this week was to remember to have fun playing ball. And to remember, you know, it's a privilege to step out on that field each and every time. I know that this can be sort of an ambiguous takeaway. It's, you know, it's relative to a person's view on the subject. But at least to me, over the past couple of days, it seems like there's been a conscious effort from the guys to remember to enjoy being out there, maybe more so than it had been in the past couple of weeks where things felt a little more tense.
I was just talking with Tom Silverstein about this, and you know what brings fun in this league?
Winning
some games. That's what they got to get back to. This is a good opportunity for them this week. You know, imagine an alternate universe where the next 2 weeks were flipped and they had this first real losing streak going into prime time at Buffalo. Mm-hmm. That's when things can snowball. This is an opportunity to prevent a snowball and avalanche from happening. There are very few get-right opponents in this league for this Packers team, but this Commanders team should be one of them. This should be a get-right week. This is an opponent they should go in there, they should handle, they should get back to winning, and they should start to figure some things out. If they don't, oh boy, you think the last 2 weeks were panic.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't this week, it's going to be very intense very quickly.
Spoon, once upon a time, the Jets and the Giants were a get-right game, too, over the past few years.
For you two.
Can I just say something about
yes.
that, Mr. Silverstein?
Yes.
Okay, so when I make predictions, I strictly go, should they win a game or not? Mm-hmm. I go down the sketch, should they win or not?
Okay.
The Packers should beat the Giants. The Packers should beat the Jets. And I get the Giants and Jets are better than what we thought in May. But they should win those games. And they should not win at Buffalo. That's not it. I don't think they should win at Philly late in November. To me, those are games they should win. And that's what amplifies how bad it is that they did not. That's, you know, not all 3-3s are the same. When you are losing to teams that you have more talent than, when you're losing to teams that you should beat, they should beat the Jets at home. That's where it's bad.
Also, yeah, in my prediction, I said that the Jets would win.
Yes, you did. You and I were the only ones who picked them.
I guess my point is, do you have to look at the Jets and the Giants individually and say, okay, they might be better than they were, but more so, like, does that create any sort of worry going into Washington in what should be a get-right game?
What I looked at when I looked at that schedule was playing in London. And the fact that this was their first trip to London and how, you know, they were going to come back and think that, you know, the Jets were going to be a slam dunk. And so when I looked at it, I didn't say for sure that those were wins because I really thought that the London experience could be a problem. And I think it has been a problem. I think they didn't react well to the travel because, you know, LaFleur complained about it all week and got in the players' heads. And then, you know, the Jets, I didn't anticipate them being as good as they are, but I did anticipate them getting off to a slow start because of the jet lag and the travel. So when I looked at it, I didn't see that. Now, I did look at Washington as a win. I really thought that'll probably be a game that they'll win. They've gone there before and had some pretty good games, gotten out of a slump, won a playoff game there. So my point being, I still didn't like totally think those were victories, but I do think this Washington game is.
Matt LaFleur was asked yesterday, would he rather face Carson Wentz than Taylor Heinicke?
Oh, what a dumb question. Who's going to answer that? What coach
in
his world?
Well, not Matt LaFleur. He said, I would never think to answer that.
A better way to ask that question might have been to leave the names out of it. Because stylistically, there might be a point there. Mm-hmm. But he's never – yeah, darn, would love to be facing Carson Wentz. That's how things come home to roost later on down the road.
Yeah, that's just stupid. Yeah. I mean, you'd be really dumb to answer that, yeah.
But to that point, would you almost rather face Carson Wentz than Taylor Heinicke this week? Taylor Heinicke had, what, almost 100 yards rushing in this game last year at Lambeau?
95 on 10 carries.
Yeah, I just think they didn't prepare for that, and now they know about it. Carson Wentz is one of those guys who can just be god-awful, but he can be pretty good, too. And if he has a day where he's moving the ball, where he's throwing accurately, he's not throwing a dumb interceptions, he could have a big day. I think they're better off facing Taylor Heinicke. They just have to protect the middle again this time.
I think Taylor Heinicke has a higher floor than people realize, but a lower ceiling than – you know, Washington probably wants. And so you can get after him.
This is the kind of game where Joe Barry's got to get after him. You can't sit back on this guy and just let him sit in the pocket and get hot like Zappy. You know, you just you can't do that. You got to get after him and force him to make some errors.
The thing that would concern me for the Packers defense, and I completely get your point that they weren't prepared for that last year, and that they should be better prepared for that now, obviously. But what does it take to rein in a dual threat quarterback, a mobile quarterback? Discipline, communication. Has this Packers defense been all that good in either of those areas this season?
No.
And so that they're going to be stressed in two areas where they have really struggled.
That's true.
Against a dual threat quarterback. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that. It's a big opportunity for them to right some things that have been wrong for most of the year. I don't know. If you got Matt LaFleur in private, off the record, a truth-telling test.
I wonder
if he would have rather faced Carson Wentz than Taylor Heinicke for those reasons. But it is – I mean – the reality is that it's going to be who they're playing. I mean, they're playing Taylor Heinicke.
Yep.
Yeah. On the flip side of the ball, actually, no, let's stay on the defensive side of the ball for a little bit longer. Last week, Joe Barry and these defensive players promised a lot of changes. Now that you've gone back and rewatched the tape from the Jets game, do you feel like they delivered and just negated to old habits when things broke down, or do you feel like there's still more room for improvement there?
Well,
what's your initial reaction?
In the passing game, other than the deep ball to Stokes, and I would say probably that, or there was a second and nine, I think, where they left, I forgot who it was, tight end wide open in the middle.
Yeah.
Other than that, I thought they played pretty well. I thought their pass defense was really good, and I thought they were way more aggressive, and the game plan to put Jair Alexander on Garrett Wilson, we talked about that earlier, was good. The run defense, they're continuing to have just like guys make boneheaded mistakes. We talked about this earlier in the year when Quay Walker was playing really well, that teams were going to figure out a way how to exploit him, and I think they're doing that. And I think they may have to take him off the field on some play, you know, in some situations, and maybe put Henry Ford in as, you know, that dime linebacker
a little
bit more. What's that?
Rudy Ford.
I'm
Henry
sorry.
Henry Ford
did I
developed
say?
The Model T.
Oh yeah.
they'd really get their drives a lot longer if they had Henry Ford.
They would. They would. They'd get it off the line really quick every 5 minutes.
Do-do-tsh.
Yeah. So I think that's a problem. You know, guys like Jonathan Garvin and Igbari, they made mistakes on key plays that broke open runs. So I think they were on the right track last week, but they can't just like, okay, you know, we did okay, let's go back to playing zone all the time.
So they've at least steered the ship in the right direction now, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think they got the message. I think Joe Barry got the message. I don't know if you can, you know, treat an old dog, or you can get an old dog to do new tricks.
I still don't know why it took so long to get the message.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either.
Puzzles me.
Yeah.
Other than bad communication that Barry thought LaFleur really wanted him to play soft against the Giants. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, all season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan, would you agree that the changes they made versus the Jets were at least enough to continue this track?
Oh, it was a step in the right direction, no question. It's what they've needed to do. We've been saying it since week one, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've been saying it since midway through week one, since literally like the second or third quarter of week one. Yeah. Well, okay, they're getting picked apart in zone. Maybe, just maybe, they should actually use the top highest paid cornerback in the history of the game. Like he is that. You know, we've been saying that all season. So, yeah, I mean, that was a step in the right direction. It worked, shocker. And now they just have to continue it. You know, obviously the run defense continues to be what it is. I think that is a byproduct of when defenses get gas because the offense gives them nothing, you usually see it in the run defense. So they've got to be better there. But the offense has got to give its defense a lot more. So, yeah, I think it was a step in the right direction.
That seemed to kind of be one of the biggest messages LaFleur had on Monday as well. And Spooner and I talked a lot about this, and not to put words in his mouth. They weren't blaming the offense, but there was a decided lack of complementary football. And so is that just sort of the first step for the offense? You know, we talk so much about the deep ball and getting it back down deep and in the air, and, you know, maybe they'll get some of that back if Sammy Watkins comes back just to stretch the field. But is the first step just to I know we say it every week, so it sounds like a broken record, to commit to the run game, not only for the betterment of the offense, but for the betterment of the defense?
Well, yeah. Yeah, and one last word on defense. Maybe Rodgers, when he said we need to simplify, was talking about defense, you know? Because that's kind of what they need to do. They need to play more man. They need to blitz some.
Just on your man.
Stop trying to make – I mean, you got to play combination coverages and things like that. But stop playing things that don't – that your guys don't understand, you know, or don't if they don't understand it now, they're probably not going to understand it all year. Play to your strengths.
You know what else they need to do? For the love of Curly Lambeau and Vince Lombardi, get a stinking takeaway.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It was in your story that I didn't even realize it was this bad until I read your game story. I think it was yours.
Yeah.
One interception this season, all the way back in week two?
Week two, yeah.
Holy smokes.
I know. I mean,
it's incredible.
And they've had balls in their hands. I mean, Savage had a shot. Alexander had a shot. Yep. You got to come down with those, you know. So, anyway.
They have a negative four turnover margin overall, too.
Yeah, that's not good.
They got to take the ball away.
Offensively, I know everybody wants to say they need to run the ball. And I do think they do need to run the ball more. But more than anything, they need to make Aaron Jones the centerpiece of their offense. And that means whether they're passing it to him or whether they're handing it off to him. You know, I have been waiting for them to line him up outside and see if he would get one-on-one coverage, because we've seen it before. He's beaten guys down the field just on a straight go route. And he's got pretty good hands. I mean, not great hands, but pretty decent enough, and they finally did it, you know, and then it was a crappy throw. Mm-hmm. But God, you should be using this guy like the Rams use Cooper Kupp. I mean, that's probably not a good example. Maybe more like Debo Samuel. You know, get this guy the ball any way you can.
Stop trying to think of him as a running back. Think of him as a weapon.
Yeah.
I'm gonna reverse opinion from where I was Sunday night when we talked. So if you remember Sunday night, I said, yeah, I kind of give him a pass because I think they wanted to run. They tried to run early, and the Jets shut that down. But that's going to be the reality all season.
Yes.
That's going to be every team from here on out that they go against, every defense is going to be trying to take that away. There can be no excuse, period, for giving Aaron Jones 9 carries. Even if they shut it down early, does it not? You have to force it. You have to continue. And the reason for that is because he's an actual superstar. Like, he is a legit Pro Bowl talent, and this offense has so few of that. Whether it's, Todd Gurley a few years ago, whether it's Christian McCaffrey now, every defense that they went against was trying to take them away, and it didn't matter. You continue to give them the ball because they're Todd Gurley, because they're Christian McCaffrey. Well, Aaron Jones is that guy in this offense. So if they shut him down early against Washington, which they might, because that Washington defensive line is pretty good. Not a lot of strengths on that Commanders roster. The defensive line's one of them. It might be a rough go early on the ground. That 100% does not matter. They have to continue forcing because, 9 carries and however many yards, him and A.J. Dillon combined for 60 yards on 19 carries, 3.1 yards per carry. That's not good. But the 10th might be the one that he pops off. Yeah.
And you know the difference between what I was talking about with Joe Barry, if it doesn't work, don't keep doing it. Well, what the Packers were running that didn't work against the Jets has worked before. It's not like they have just been blown up every time they run an outside zone or an inside zone or a power play. They've proven they can run against good defenses, but they just gave up. They just like, Quinnen Williams is blowing us up. Let's just not run that play. Let's not run any traps. Let's not run anything, misdirection. We'll just, try to go with whatever we can to avoid him. And I just thought that was a bad game plan.
And, Aaron Rodgers even said on Wednesday, I think that the game plan or the offense that we're running could work, but it's usually 10 guys doing the right thing and one guy doing the wrong thing. And he said it can be a different guy that does the wrong thing each time. And he said it's sometimes it's me at times. But and Spooner, you and I were watching a couple of plays yesterday, and on some of those runs, if one guy makes a different block, mm-hmm. Aaron Jones breaks it off.
Absolutely.
And so to your point, stick with it because it could just be that one play where everybody does what they're supposed to do right. They're 1/11th. And he breaks it off for a big touchdown because he has the capability to still do that.
Yep.
Let's talk about the offensive line, actually, now that we're kind of dancing around it. There's been scuttlebutt of changes on the line this week from what you've seen at practice. Do you think that happens? Spoon, I know you talked to some of the linemen yesterday on Wednesday. Do we see major changes on Sunday?
Well, Yash Nyman sure didn't deny that he was going to be playing right tackle on Sunday. So I would lay down everything that he's going to be the starting right tackle on Sunday. And then Elgton Jenkins will move inside and John Runyon will be the other guard. How they play those two, whether they put Jenkins back on the left side, that's certainly a possibility. Runyon has played on the right side. The big thing is they got Royce Newman out of the lineup, and they had to. I mean, he doesn't deserve all the blame for everything that happened Sunday, but he's the weak link right now. And they got to figure out a way to get Elgton Jenkins playing like Elgton Jenkins. I mean, he's been giving up pressures and sacks and, bad runs all year, and he's just not comfortable there. Coming off the ACL, I bet you if you put him there last year before he tore the ACL, he'd be fine. And he had played right tackle a couple times. But right now, for whatever reason, it's just not working for him.
Ryan, do you think that's the answer?
I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer.
You sound like Matt LaFleur.
I think they absolutely – well, I can't know because I don't think the Packers really know because we haven't seen Yash Nyman at right tackle. So – 800 snaps, 10 starts over the last year, it's all been at left side. I know he's played an awfully solid left tackle, and it's a lot harder to go from right tackle to left tackle than left tackle to right tackle in this league. So I think without question, and it's funny that, when Matt LaFleur and his coaching staff start listening to our podcast and implementing our changes, right? For example, move Jair Alexander around. Well, it took him a few weeks, but they finally did that. Put Yash Nyman at right tackle. Took them a few weeks, but they're finally going to do that.
Open the season with a deep shot to Christian Watson.
Yeah, yeah. Christian Watson, right?
Exactly. So, you know, Green 19 podcast here, a little bit ahead of the curve, but they have no choice but to try it. I have no idea if it'll work, but they have no choice, and that's what I wrote about Sunday. They have no choice because when your plan B is, let's put Jake Hansen in for Royce Newman, and that was a move that was, you know, if not for the biceps injury, he was going to play the rest of that game. You've got a left tackle that's played pretty well at left tackle that you can put at right tackle, and then, hey, move Elgton Jenkins back to his best position and, to Spoon's point, get him kick-started. I think the big question now is which side, left guard or right guard, Elgton Jenkins is going to play, and it sure seems like potentially left guard. But the pros and cons there, you want as little movement up front as possible. So if you move Elgton Jenkins to left guard, you're moving two spots to fill one, to fill that one on the right side. If you put him at right guard, you're putting him in a position that he's played a lot less. Elgton Jenkins played a whole lot more left guard, and you're not combining him with David Bakhtiari in that left side, which was so dominant in 2020. But you're having more stability there. So I think that's an interesting call for them to make.
Yeah. Can I just add two things?
Yeah, absolutely.
One is, don't forget that Yash Nyman, we all have the impression that he played really well at left tackle, but he did have some blips. Like, I went back and looked, and I think he gave up like four quarterback hits and two pressures. I don't think he gave up a sack, but he had some rough moments. He's probably going to have some rough moments on the right side. But I think one thing it will do is close up whatever gap they had running the ball on the right side. Like, he's a pretty good run blocker. He's just a big man. So they're not going to just overrun him on that side. And I think that could help their running game. The other thing is, if you put Jenkins at left guard, all of a sudden you don't have to slide the line one way or the other. You go, David Bakhtiari, you take this dude. Elgton Jenkins, you take this dude, and the other three guys, you take everybody else. You know, you slide to the pressure. So I think that's why they like having those two guys together, because if two guys are coming at them, fine. You don't need a third guy to block them. You're both good enough to do that. So that's another reason that to move Elgton Jenkins to left guard.
To your point on Yash Nyman, isn't there something to be said for the more he does it, the better he's likely to get at it? He hasn't had a lot of experience at right tackle, and one thing one thing I don't expect is it to be like an overnight fix, like voila, this is a 2020 Packers offensive line all over again and Aaron Rodgers is completely clean and there's huge massive running lanes. I don't know that this is going to work like that, but there's 11 games to go, and the more Yash Nyman plays right tackle, the better he's likely to get at right tackle, and in the long-term view, that's probably the best choice you have to right this offensive line for when it needs to be right, which is December and January.
They've still got Jonathan Allen. They got Montez Sweat. And they've got Deron Payne, too, who's a pretty good player.
Well, even if they didn't have that, he hasn't played a lot of right tackle. So it's natural that there's going to be some growing pains at a spot that at this level, he hasn't played a whole lot. That's why you make the change in mid-October to get those growing pains out of the way now so that they're better for it later on.
Past couple of days at practice, Sammy Watkins has been back out there moving pretty decently well. Matt LaFleur seemed to think he moved really, really well based on what he said on Thursday. I wasn't ready to go quite that far, but he did move well. They were running a drill on Thursday's practice when we were out there where it was like a resistance drill where, you know, they're pulling on the chain behind him, and Sammy Watkins was like three steps ahead of everybody else. And I think that's partly just he's glad to be back out there. I know he's still the older Sammy Watkins. He's probably going to have another hamstring injury before the season's over. But does just his simple presence on the field stretch the defense more? If he's back out there on Sunday getting his sea legs under him to get ready for Buffalo, does that, at least in theory, stretch the field more, Ryan?
Well, more is a variable word. More than it has, maybe. Is it a real significant move the needle presence? I don't know if I'd say that. I think he contributes to the offense. I think that it's obviously good whenever he comes back for him to be on the field, because this is a receiving core that lacks talent, you know, to this point in the season. He still has the deepest catch of the entire year in week two against the Bears. So I don't think of Sammy Watkins at this point in his career as MVS, you know, as a guy that you put him on the field and voila, you got a lot of two shell and it's going to open up the box. And it's, you know, I don't think it's going to be like that, but it's obviously it's good for him to be back. The question is, how much longer will he be back? Because I was pretty surprised to hear how this hamstring injury happened. And Sammy Watkins told me that he felt discomfort even against the Bears during the game. And he went out to practice Wednesday, and maybe this was what part of what Matt LaFleur was talking about when he kind of fell on the sword and felt bad for the injury, because maybe Matt LaFleur felt like he should have prevented Sammy Watkins from practicing Wednesday. But Sammy Watkins practiced that following Wednesday, and he was determined to go, he said, 85%. And he did that until the last rep of the entire practice. And he ran a comeback route at full throttle. He gets to the top of the route, breaks it off to come back. He said he stopped wrong. He dug his heel into the ground. And when he did that, he felt his hamstring that had been bothering him completely go. He said he fell right on the spot. And if he hadn't fallen right on the spot, he felt like it was going to get torn clean off the bone. So it was good that he fell, obviously. It would have been much more severe if he'd tried to push through that. But this is a receiver who is, you would think at this point, has learned through all kinds of trial and mostly error that you've got to maintain your body. You cannot open it up if you feel anything less than 100%. It's a long season. Let's not forget 2018. He had a right foot injury against Cleveland. He came back 2 weeks later and made it only 5 snaps against the Los Angeles Rams until he had to leave that game. And then he missed with a right foot injury, and he missed the final 5 games of that season. He's been through this before, and he should know by now not to push through any type of discomfort.
Yeah, so I think his biggest contribution will be the times that the Packers face single high safeties. Not that he's going to beat people deep. I think he can really exploit the middle of the field. I think the slants, when he gets press coverage from a guy and a single safety back there, and they do the two crossing routes that everybody does now, Sammy Watkins can get open on that. I think in the cover two stuff, you know, well, then they should be running the ball a lot during that. But he can really make someone pay, I think, for bringing that safety up. And if you think about it, you know, they've tried to get the ball to Dobbs over the middle. You know, they've tried to stress the middle, and he's been good, but he's not been good after the catch. You know, he makes the catch, but he's not just broken tons of tackles unless it's been a screen. So I think Watkins can help them there, and I'm interested to see that if he plays on Sunday.
You know, Matt LaFleur made the comment this week that having Sammy back on the field is a huge boost to the run game as well, because he said, you know, Sammy Watkins is, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm remembering how he said it wrong, but he essentially said Sammy Watkins is second only to Alan Lazard from what he has seen in his time coaching as a blocking receiver.
He is a good blocker, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best blockers he's been around as a receiver.
And he's a big man, too. Right. He's deceptively big.
And so he said, you know, if we put Sammy and Lazard out there on the edge as blockers, that opens up our run game more, just having Watkins back on the field for that.
Yeah. When I talked to Watkins, too, his biggest concern was run after the catch. You know, can he kick it into another gear with that hamstring? And so I'm sure that's what he's trying to find out in practice this week.
Here's the question: is he going to return this week? And Spoon,
right. Yeah. It's not a given. You're
well,
right.
Ordinarily, I would say no way. Mm-hmm. He just got back to practice this week, and I might still be leaning that way. But Spoon, he told you that he was full throttle running last week,
yeah.
So he had a full week of running full speed before returning to practice. So in reality, this is not week one for him. This is week two. This team almost always wants to have multiple weeks before they get a guy who's been on IR back on the field. He's practiced the first 2 days of this week. If he practices Friday, I'm curious what you think.
It's a really good question. I think he'll play. I think as long as he doesn't have – he was back out there on Thursday after in pads. And so if he's out there on Friday, then I think he's going to play. How much they play him, I would bet that – you know, one of the problems I think why LaFleur was kicking himself for that Bears – or after the Bears game – was that Wednesday practice was too long and in pads. And like you said, Watkins got hurt on the last play. And so he's kicking himself for going that long. Like, you know, he shouldn't have pushed them as far mm-hmm. as he did. So, and they were in pads back then on Thursdays, or on Wednesdays, remember? So, and they're back in pads on Thursdays. So I think they just have to be careful. If he feels any twinges, then they got to pull him out.
This may have absolutely nothing to do with it. I'm just curious because I've realized we haven't talked about it before. They took Sammy with them to London, which seemed a little strange since he was on IR. Do you think there's any thinking? Like, what's the logic behind that? Just having him there to...
Did he work out before the game? Did you see whether he was working out on the field at all? Sometimes they do that. They bring guys and they want to give them sort of the routine and work them out on Sundays. But he's also a likable guy in the locker room and a veteran, and they probably wanted him around just to, be with the players.
The thing I will say is, from what he told me, when this injury first happened, again, Sammy Watkins has a ton of experience with these kind of injuries. He thought it'd be an 8-week thing. He thought it was going to be long term. He said his body is never healed from this type of injury, soft tissue, as fast as it did this time, and he was really surprised. It's definitely within the realm of possibility. He was feeling pretty good because he was running full speed the week after. He was probably feeling pretty good the week before when they went to London. So it's not like he was still very, gimpy and had a big problem with that hamstring at that point.
I have a feeling that the caution was putting him on IR. Like, maybe they could have played him the next week or the week after that, but they said, no, let's just shut him down.
Is that what they're weighing right now with Christian Watson?
Yeah, they got to be, right?
Well, in fact, with Sammy Watkins, he said that not only did he heal physically faster, but the way that the team handled this injury in the first, he was really down on himself. I mean, he was really upset about it. And the first thing that the training staff, the coaches said was, don't worry about it. There's a spot waiting for you when you come back. Take your time. Be patient. And he didn't ever have to feel like he was looking over his shoulder like, oh, he's new to this team. He just got here. What's going to happen? Let's not forget, he has a very incentive-laden contract, right? Yeah. And he never had to worry about that. He said that he never got into a dark place like he would in the past. In the past, he would get into be very irritable at home and meetings, just really miserable to be around. This was different for him from that standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, the way that it was handled by the team, he certainly appreciated.
With that in mind, though, you said, Spoon, you think that's what they're currently weighing with Christian Watson, whether or not to shut him down and put him on IR.
Yeah. I'll say it again and again. You know, the rookies, once they get behind, they just seems like they never catch up.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he'll catch up later. I don't know what good it is to keep him on the roster if, he's not going to play this week. He did play last week.
This is now the second week he hasn't practiced.
Yeah. I don't know why they're waiting. Maybe the injury isn't as bad. They got to make a decision on Randall Cobb, mm-hmm. too. I'm surprised they didn't put him on IR right away.
Yeah. Randall Cobb's reaction made it seem like it wasn't as big of a deal.
Right.
And Matt LaFleur sort of said the same thing on Monday.
He was in a boot yesterday. I saw him.
He was? Okay. I didn't see that.
And now they do that for any ankle sprain. But that tells me he's not back in 2 weeks. I'd be surprised if it's 2 weeks.
The fact that IR has been reduced to 4 weeks, it feels like it should give them a lot more flexibility.
Well, I think with Christian Watson, I get the sense they think he's going to be back before the 4-week window, and that's why he hasn't been put on IR. This week, week two.
So they think he'll be back for Buffalo.
This week, week two. I don't know about Buffalo, but by the fourth game. this week, week two,
yeah,
he's been on the side stretching during practice. He's been around on the field, which we didn't see the week before. It wouldn't surprise me if he practices next week and then he goes the week after, which would be the fourth game.
While we're on the subject of receivers, I feel obligated to ask this. Do you put anything into the Chase Claypool rumors?
I haven't heard any Chase Claypool
rumors.
Yeah,
it's been reported that they're interested. They liked him a lot before the draft. Chase Claypool at 6'4", 235, fits the mold for Brian Gutekunst's receivers. He likes them big, tall, rangy. He fits that mold. And, again, they liked him a lot before the draft. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense theoretically until they make a move. It's just in theory. But
you know, we've gotten a million of those reports before because Brian Gutekunst calls everybody just to see what the price would be. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I don't know what – I thought Pittsburgh was getting – really wanted to keep him now. You know, I don't know. Who knows? Yeah, he's a guy who has to be out there. You know, I think that DJ Moore from Carolina is a guy they should be willing to give a first-round pick for.
And Carolina's packing up and shipping everybody out.
Yeah, but they're supposedly holding on to DJ Moore, but that may be to get Moore. My argument is, in terms of giving a first-round pick, is you got an extra first-round pick for Davante Adams this past year, and you used it, two first-round picks, on defensive guys. You built your defense. This would be your first-round pick next year if you could get DJ Moore. He's got a huge contract. Next year, I think his base is like $13
million. I think it's 19.
And a bunch of it
is 19, though.
Yeah, and a bunch of it is guaranteed. So I don't know how that would work, but that's an impact guy. That's not a you know, a guy where you go, okay, I hope he helps us.
I'm completely in lockstep with you on that. I think that DJ Moore is the guy who should be at the top of that list. There is long-term, because he's got 3 years at like $19 million after this season. Long-term, there's some salary cap gymnastics that they would have to do, but his base salary this year is like $1 million, one point something.
It's easy this year.
So you fit it on pretty easily this year. And then Russ Ball does what Russ Ball does this offseason, and he does some cartwheels, and he – works it out. That's what he does. And then you're able to, he's 25 years old this year, age 25 season. He is a first round talent. He is a stud receiver. This Packers offense is desperately lacking a stud receiver. I think that's the guy. If you're maybe the one guy that can they move the needle for this offense, DJ Moore, I think could.
When is the trade deadline?
November 1st.
So coming up here soon in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. Guys, before we wrap up here, no scores. Those will be in the paper, Green Bay Press Gazette, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but just your overarching prediction for this game, Spoon.
I think this will be a game the Packers win. I think they'll win fairly easily. I think it's a bounce-back game. I don't think they're facing a team nearly as physical and as talented as the Jets. And so I think they got a pretty good chance of walking away there with a decent-sized victory.
As I said on Green Bay Nation Wednesday night, this week has been so bad for Dan Snyder. It is so hard to see this terrible Commanders team coming away with a win. This is a Commanders franchise that is in turmoil, not just on the field because they're not good, but off the field as well with, you know, owners now calling for Dan Snyder to sell the franchise. The walls are caving in. That's a big, big reason why this, you know, the talent, the turmoil off the field, this is a get-right week for the Packers. They have to take the gifts that they're given, and this is a gift. They have to take it.
I agree with both of y'all, but especially what you were saying. This is an organization that's broken from the top to the bottom, and that can't help but leak down. And, you know, they've got some talent in spots, but not enough across the board to make up for a club where you just don't even know what you're getting when you walk into it every day. You know, like we said, Sweat, Allen, those are some forcible talents in the front four, but, you know, talent-wise and scheme-wise, Green Bay should have enough to shut that down. So I think that they win easily. But been wrong about that before. We will all be there. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, we will all be there. Yep. So we will be there to cover it for you all, no matter what happens from Washington, D.C. Although I think FedEx Field is actually in Maryland.
Correct. Landover, Maryland.
Landover, Maryland. Landover, that sounds cool. But no, we'll be in D.C. this weekend to cover it for you all as the Packers look to get back above 500. Guys, thank you as always. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.